Hello, and welcome to Cinemondo Explores Star Trek with Kathy, Mark, and Burke. Today's episode, Tomorrow is Yesterday. And the star date is 3113.2.
And this, because tomorrow's yesterday is confusing, the other Mark didn't know we were recording today because he thought it was yesterday. So now we have Mark Maddox alone. So that's all.
Yeah,
we
have a different Mark today because we told
today's
we told
Mark
other
is
Mark
played
that
by
tomorrow
Mark
is yesterday and yesterday became tomorrow, which is today. But we
right, so
tomorrow
he just
was tomorrow. So now tomorrow is yesterday. So that's why we have Mark Maddox with us.
That's right.
Which worked out pretty good.
He can decipher that.
Yeah. So this is a Star Trek episode that everybody loves.
Love it. I do love it.
You like it, Kathy?
I love it.
Wow.
I like the confined Star Trek. I like this in the, you know, in buildings and inside little tiny rooms.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, this one, let me do the real quick synopsis and we can jump into talking about the coolness of it. But it's a time travel episode, and I'm a sucker for time travel. But it's a cool twist on time travel because it's the future. Usually your characters go into the future, but in this case, our characters pull somebody from the past into the future. So it's almost like a time travel story that you would normally see from the side of the person who gets pulled onto the ship, you know. But in this case, they pull a guy from the 60s. There's some kind of drama that goes on before the show starts, and they get pulled into a black star, which I guess is a black
probably
hole.
What they were calling a black hole at the time, I would imagine. Yeah.
And it you know, flung them out, and they went back in time, and the U.S. Navy, I guess it was the Navy, send up a plane to investigate this UFO, and it's the Enterprise up there, and the guy sees it.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was super
cool. It was
cool
to see that. I liked it.
It's the Air Force.
The Air Force. Okay. But they
the Navy.
They put
the Air Force. That's my reason for being on this show is the Air Force is in this episode.
Oh yeah, it says Air Force Base here on my
God.
Air Force Base 1969.
A Navy man swam up there and looked at that.
It wasn't the Coast Guard like I thought. Anyway,
it wasn't those. Who were those guys that wore red berets and defended people in New York? I forget.
Yeah, what was that? Like the Angels or something?
The Angels.
Oh yeah, the Guardian Angels.
Guardian
yeah.
Angels. They were the ones that spot the Enterprise.
The Guardian Angels see the Enterprise. No, it's a guy. It's an Air Force guy in a jet, and he sees it, and it's like. And the cool thing is, it's the highest tech, the state of the art jet at the time the show was made, and so it was. You know, he sees this Enterprise up there, doesn't know what it is. The Enterprise see him, and they're basically saying, get a tractor beam on him so he doesn't fire a nuclear missile at us because it could do some damage, because they were still sort of trying to do some repairs and kind of, not moving as fast as normal, so they couldn't get away from him. They put the tractor beam on him, and it starts to tear up his jet because it's old, old technology. And they beam him out of his jet. And so now they have a guy from the 60s, a 60s Air Force pilot on board the Enterprise.
Whoops.
Yeah, and it's a really cool episode because it goes through those things where they're actually talking in, those science fiction terms about, okay, if we send him back or if we do this, we may negatively impact history. What if, and if we keep him on board the Enterprise, he may have contributed something that eventually led to, and there's all
butterfly
these cool,
effect.
Yeah. Which is really cool when they address that. A lot of times in time travel stories from back in those days was never addressed,
No one cares.
You go back and hang out with Andrew Jackson or something. It doesn't hurt anything.
You go back and shoot Hitler, something worse might happen.
Or shoot Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
That's true. So what could happen?
Yeah,
but
well,
then it becomes about how do we fix this? How do we fix this big screw up that happened?
Well, because at first they tell him no, you can't go back, and he's like, huh? I mean, honestly, I think if they told me I couldn't go back, I think I'd be okay with it because the ship is pretty damn cool and you're in the future. And who would want
family?
Come on, yeah, but
what about Cinemondo?
Yeah,
family?
What about the podcast?
I just beam you guys on. We can continue the podcast on Star Trek. I would want to be in the future. Like, there's always that question, like, would you get on the alien ship? Would you go in the future? I mean, I feel like it's a once in a lifetime thing. Why not?
one of the brilliant things about this episode is that the time travel problems keep layering on top of the last one. And, you know, so you've got this guy, they've crushed his jet. He's on there. Spock walks over, gives Kirk the bad news. He goes, like, you know, you really could be causing a problem here. Now Kirk gets worried, just goes up to the guy and goes, hey, we can't send you back. I mean, it's like, it's kind of funny. There's no easing into it. It's like, we're going to explain to you time travel and what could really be bad. They don't even do this. Like, we can't send you back. You know the future. You could alter it or change it, or somebody else could change it.
So stay.
And so he starts getting mad. And then Spock comes in, and this is like a slap in the face of Captain really Christopher, funny. The Air Force guy, and he goes, well, you don't have any significant contribution to...
Yeah, I love that.
There's nothing. We've gone through your history. Your life was nothing.
Yeah.
But you did have sex with this woman, and then you had a kid that did something better than you.
Yeah.
And your son will come along.
And that's exactly how Spock said it.
Yes. Well, it's kind of, it's like I'm watching it, you know, as a kid, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And it is cool. But, you know, I guess I'm jumping ahead to our the end of the show where we say something nasty about it. But
no, Spock, we don't say nasty.
We don't nasty.
Affectionately but, nasty.
Affectionately nasty. So Spock basically tells the guy, it's like, you know, you've got nothing, but we have to send him back because eventually he will have a son who will do something very important, some Saturn probe thing that he'll work on or something. And it's neat the way that they stack this stuff, and it still stacks even when they go down to the surface, they go down to Earth, go to the Air Force base with this, by the way, NOR lighting in an Air Force base. I lived in Air Force bases for my first 15 years of life. I'm going to tell you, you want to see what an Air Force base looks like? Look at Mindhunter when they're standing under fluorescent green lights. That's what those rooms looked like. But
you know what? I put a note going, this episode had really cool lighting.
It did. Yeah.
It was really cool.
It's still that great Star Trek first season lighting. It's that great shadowy.
Yeah, I loved it. It's so very glossy and just
romantic. It's very romanticized lighting, and it works to a T.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bert.
No, the indication I got was that this was sort of after hours at the Air Force base, and it's, you know,
it's party time.
They're all kind of sleeping.
After hours.
That's that film that Nick Spock was looking at, kind of crude.
Yeah.
She's got a big ass, you know.
God.
You guys up on tables with party whistles and stuff.
Yeah.
No, it's just sort of, you know, the idea is that there's guards walking around, but it's nighttime, right?
It's a slow day at the Air Force Base.
Yeah.
But even when those guys were working, like when they opened it, I was kind of confused at first, like, wait, am I on the right show? Because they just show these two guys in the smallest room ever, teeny, and it was dark in the room and kind of moody, and he's looking at the, you know, the computer.
It was a dark room. It was obviously nighttime and everything. They obviously beamed down there at night. Better to do it at night than in the daytime.
Yeah.
The thing that
because when it's nighttime, it gets dark in the room. So
I mean, you think about Star Trek IV, where they plop them right in the middle of San Francisco with taxi cab guys yelling at them and punk rockers. My friend Kirk Thatcher getting the Vulcan nerve pinch and all that stuff.
Love that.
And you've got all this stuff. But they had the budget. They had a $20 million budget.
Yeah.
These guys couldn't even look out a window and have Sulu go, hey, look at that jet. That's pretty cool.
There's windows on this Air Force base either. It's all these tiny little, I was expecting to see, like, they probably just put some boards up and just kind of propped them up. Let's just make a corner here. We've got an office. Done.
I have a feeling that was a borrowed set. I mean, there was a lot going on at Paramount in those days and on the different stages. And a lot of times when you're shooting and you need a hospital room for one shot, it's like, oh, there's a hospital room over on stage 15. We can just borrow that, you know, on a Saturday or something. Or you know, just put it up in a corner of the set that we already have, you know, like there's always the area of the stage for swing sets where you just build the date, you know, the episode specific set. And it's just an L, you know, just an L shaped hallway. You shoot it from this direction where the end of the hallway turns that way. And then you go down that hall and shoot down that way where the end of the hall turns to the right. And you've got a huge military base.
That's what it looks like.
change the label on a door from one thing to another thing, and you've got two different entire offices. But they did great things on this show with a low with a relatively low budget, and which is odd because I think it had a high budget for the times. But the interesting thing about it is, like I always keep saying with science fiction, you can't. In this case, you could, but in most cases with Star Trek, you couldn't get away with using store-bought, off-the-shelf rental or swing sets that are already standing. You can't just use a regular hospital room. You have to make it look like a 100, 200 year, 300 years from now hospital room, you know. And medical devices, you can't just have him use a stethoscope. He has to have a whole new thing. Yep. So everything has to be created. And this is one of the episodes where they were able to use off the shelf props, which there were a few episodes that they got to do that.
Well, this seemed like a budgetary episode in a way, because it was all just the rooms. Like, they didn't really have to do anything fancy. They had to build a set and then no exterior, exterior set. They just had these little rooms. Everybody was
I was hoping for a boat chase. A big boat chase. With a ferry boat chasing a canoe.
Coast Guard.
Kind of like shore leave. Everybody can run around in the woods.
The Hell's Angels or Satan, whoever the angels were, they were in it. The thing is too, and I remember watching this episode with my dad, and he would kind of look at stuff and go, yeah, everything's fine. But then he could see the uniform of like one of the security guards. He goes, I don't remember any Air Force security having those kind of clothes. I mean, the beret. That's more of a green beret sort of a thing or whatever.
Special tactics or something. I don't remember
any sort. Yeah, it's a specialty sort of a uniform. And I think that even the head security guy, who was pretty good. I mean, there was some really good comedy and drama in this episode. I'm going to lock you up for 200 years. Kirk looks right at the camera and goes, that ought to be just about right. And it's like there's a brilliant interplay between the seriousness where Captain Christopher is hitting somebody and then pulling a gun on them and stuff like that, and real trouble, and then some good laughs too, with it.
Well, I loved when they first go down, Sulu and Kirk go down to the Air Force base, and they look kind of like, look, paper.
Yeah, that thing really like, point to
like
the
a bulletin board. They're kind of like, look how quaint this is.
Look at
this. And they're being sort of smug about it. Like,
kinky, they actually had to tack that up. They actually had to tack that up to let people know.
And they never seem to take any of it seriously. I guess they could be beamed up at any time. But here they are in the room being interrogated, and Kirk is so snarky. He's all like, whatever. He's so
superior.
Well,
here's the thing. Here's the thing that I thought about the episode, talking to the idea of the uniforms that they went with the beret and everything.
Right.
It actually, this episode, the 60s that they're talking about in the episode is actually a little bit in the future. I think it's when they shot episode, because they talk about they're just on the eve of the first manned space flight to the moon, which, as we all know, happened in 1969, which is after this episode. This episode was shot.
Mm-hmm. They predicted it.
Like, it's 2 years away still. So maybe there was some change in the military base uniforms. I don't know.
Well, what I thought was interesting.
Burke at Star Trek's lawyer.
Yeah.
On the Enterprise, when Captain Christopher, which just seems like a weird name to me, it's like,
What is that actor's name? Because I love that guy.
He's good.
He was running around and he burst through this door, and there's this man in like these red loungy pajamas or something. What the hell was that all about? Like, I've never seen that on Star Trek. He had these totally like red, flaming red pajamas. He's like, what? They look like silk. And then they knock Christopher out. But he's like, what the hell is that?
Well, there was things. Remember, too, it was weird. I mean, I remember I got this at the time, but he Kirk brings him into the Enterprise and is showing him around, and some lady goes, hey, Captain, or something like that.
Right.
And he goes, a woman. And at that time, man, that was like, that was a surprising thing. You could see it from his standpoint. Nowadays, in modern times, it's like, it's no big deal. But some of the stuff, I mean, some of the little things like seeing Spock for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or the great shot, even though I think this guy overacted a little bit, the security, Air Force security guy, where he's standing there holding the pistol and not doing anything.
That was funny.
But when Spock, when they started his feet and pans up to them, and then he goes like this, you know, with the eyebrow.
That's great.
And I'm like, that is just great stuff. Underplayed and very funny. Yeah.
He had extra sultry makeup on in this episode. It was extra dark and violet.
What did you say, sultry?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Spock was being very sultry.
Get Spock and put him in a sparkly outfit.
Exactly.
Kathy's ready to party.
Like so much makeup on his eyes in this episode. I don't know what that was about.
There are some sort of heavy makeup episodes in this series. Yeah, it's funny. Every Kirk once in a while,
he's more green. Out. I never really with the modern prints and stuff like that. There's some episodes where I see him. He's more green than he is in other ones. Yeah. And I'm like, because I remember when I was a kid, I had a jigsaw puzzle based more on the animated series and everything, but it showed Spock on the pad with on the transporter pad and a couple of the other guys. And it was like, why are they painting him green? And yeah, later you see it was too green, but still they were, you know. And then I looked later and I guess he is green in some episodes. It was interesting to
that me. Is interesting. Or this I guess it depends on the makeup artist.
Yellowish color almost.
Yeah, like a sickly, like I'm on the airplane and I don't like it. Sort of green.
Well, the actor who played Captain Christopher's name is Roger Perry, and he was in some pretty cool. He was in
Count Yorga,
Vampire, and the love Return both of Count those Yorga. Films. And Roller, he was in Roller Boogie.
Oh, see, huge hit.
But yeah, you know, you recognize him, and he seems like a familiar mm-hmm. face. He's another one of those actors. And also there's another guy, one of the officers who's got kind of a David Jansen vibe to him, in who is the guy who interrogates Kirk and says the thing about 200 years, I'll lock you up.
He's good.
That guy is cool. They did such great casting on this show that when you see this guy who played Captain Christopher, Roger Perry, you're like, he would have been a great crew member on the Enterprise. Like, wouldn't it have been cool if they had kept him on the ship, and he would have been the guy from the 60s on the Enterprise from then on. Would have been,
he was a producer too on stuff that I like too, but he was one of those people, those reliable Hollywood actors at the time that we saw all these people. You watch an old television show and I gotta remember that person and that person and that, and he was one of those, but he really was a class act, I think, and he was perfect for this episode.
Mm-hmm. We had a gravitas, he actually seemed like a real Air Force guy. And you know why? Because he actually was. He served as an intelligence officer in the United States Air Force during the early 1950s.
Wow,
so he kind of had that gravitas of a guy who would be a pilot. You believe him. You buy it, and the way he acts,
So shall we talk about that calm that Kirk is interacting with the sultry, I'm going to say sultry again, because that's the only way to say it. The computer going, hello, it's just like so bizarre. And so Kirk is getting all like rattled by it. Like, stop
right.
Make it stop. Stop it.
Right.
What was that all about?
Show the daily plight of living in the future. This is what it's like to live in the future. It's not
a way to put up with women.
Also show Christopher that these are likable people and they've got day-to-day problems, some of them humorous,
right.
In other words, it was sort of to kind of get him like, these people are okay, kind of thing.
Like they were messing with Kirk. I don't know what was going on there. Kirk is kind of like, stop it.
What was that last thing where he says, I think this thing, this machine needs to be scrapped, or when it goes computed dear, or something like the Majel Barrett, you can tell it's her voice,
it was so funny. And since DC Fontana wrote it, I'm assuming there's some sort of writer. Funny little inverted funny thing going on there.
I think we lost her last year, didn't we? I mean she really wrote she wrote that one, and then the I can't believe I'm forgetting the names. The really good, important one with Spock and his parents, and the Journey to Babel.
Yeah. She wrote some of the real the crowd pleaser ones, the real character driven ones.
And ones that still define stuff in Star Trek to this day.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like she just sort of like, oh, cool, that's a real good episode, warm and fuzzy, I feel great. It was like, that's the canon now that is still being applied through it.
Yeah.
I mean,
cool.
Yeah.
She wrote those stories that had the human element, the kinds of story, because it's always fun to see stories about a regular person in an absolutely irregular situation. And this gave you an opportunity for that using this Captain Christopher, which again, like I was saying, is kind of a weird thing to pull somebody from, which at the time was the present, into the Star Trek. And you're seeing our familiar Star Trek world through his eyes, which is pretty interesting. And that's a that's a thing that was kind of like you were talking about, that one shot where it pans up Mr. Spock to his face. It's almost like we're seeing him for the first time, and we're like, oh my God, how weird is he? You know, it's like,
yeah, I mean, what would you, how would you react to something like that? And this isn't even, I mean, you know, the three of us here, we think of science fiction, fantasy, and horror all the time. It's like that.
Yeah.
This is like some guy, nuts and bolts Air Force dude,
right,
who doesn't think about this stuff. And I mean, I could see what would happen even if I was in that place. Well, we got into a time warp and you know, all kind of stuff. And I'd be like, even I'm into science fiction. That sounds like a load of crap. But here's this Air Force guy. They kind of, they've only got 52 minutes or 54 minutes or whatever. So they kind of move it along. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was Kirk's fighting in this episode.
Yeah.
The incredible, beautiful, graceful ballet of Shatner fighting, which was almost anywhere from corny to wonderful, like when Christopher goes to get on the transport pad and Kirk goes like this, and then just a beautiful, not even much effort, like, this is going to be easy, just takes the guy out. But when he fights with the guys on the Air Force base, he's punching them, he's swinging, there's that beautiful Kirk Fu where he boop, boop, hits the guy, boop, boop, and then
the two-footed leap is a
I mean, but then there's that one part. He's beat a couple of those guys up. They start coming back from those film canisters on the wall, and Kirk uses his whole body as a weapon. He jumps up sideways and lands, and he hits them, and somehow that knocks them out for a minute. I don't really know, but it's like
down.
Birds and chirping and
so funny. But
I just love the way Kirk throws a punch. It's like, this is just standard, like the way we would be writing with a pencil. It's just like,
you know, I think he was doing it to make noise. I think he wanted to knock those cans over to make a lot of noise so Sulu would hear him and get out. I think that was like,
but I'm talking about just the act of his body knocking. You watch the guys again next time, they'll tumble and everything. And it's TV fighting, but it was, I love the fight
and the door swing that he does. He grabs the door frame and swings in, and it's like, wow.
It's almost a little bit of a precursor to me, this episode. Some of the humor in it is a precursor to the the one with the gangsters, the gangster episode.
Oh, a piece of the action.
Piece of the action. There's that. That's even more revved up. And an episode I actually really like, although it's like you're going out there, but still it's fun in its own, on its own merits. But this reminds me a little bit of some of the humor in this one.
Yeah,
it was a strange little mix of humor and that sort of cool sci-fi time travel. It was a strange little mix.
It had a couple of dun 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 dun, dun moments, you know, where they played that theme, you know, and those are fun when you do them in, you know, a certain amount. You can't do too much. You can't overdo the humor. The guy you were talking about that's sort of frozen in terror or shock or awe or whatever and he's just like, but then later, you know, in the next scene, he's standing over by the transporter controls and they do that gag where he's like, "You hungry?" And he's like, "Yeah," you know?
Yeah.
Well, it was chicken all soup good. Would be good chicken right about soup. Now.
And the guy happens to have a chicken soup disc
card. Well, he pulled it out from the guy. Probably got stacks of them. You want a hamburger? You
but he
want,
was
you
holding
know.
Them in his hand, and he said chicken soup, and he goes,
"Well, maybe." Oh, Burke, come on! You know, he just there was a little lever, and he pushed it, and now I'm there. Now I'm Star Trek's lawyer, and you take it, you push it a little bit.
Obviously, it heard what he said. The computer is definitely, we establish it in this episode that it's voice activated. So when he
I get the impression there's probably a lot of chicken soup going on in that ship.
Yeah.
It's probably that's why
they're
one.
All, that's why they're all well built. That's why they're all thin. Right. You know,
it's interesting to know the liquid diet hasn't changed much in all this time.
They never catch a cold.
You know, the thing is, you look at that, you look at stuff like that, and once again, Star Trek was doing that stuff, and I'm sure they had microwave ovens even then. I remember seeing them as early, you know, in commercial use in like 70. You know, I remember sitting there going, you know, eating a hamburger from at the local pool and going, "Is Blackula coming to the theater this week?" I mean, I swear. And it was like, but they had a microwave oven. If they had it then for commercial use, they had to have it in the 60s. But watching Star Trek have it even more fast.
Yeah.
Like 5 seconds or
and
3 seconds.
And it's like it created it. It was like just sort of materializes.
It beams it in. I think it beams it in or something like that.
It uses the allegedly, according to, you know, canon law of the show, it uses transporter technology to assemble the molecules into the food.
Right.
That's why it's called a food replicator.
Then why was it such a big damn deal in that other episode that they had little like turkeys?
I know. There's a few episodes where they talk about the cook.
Little cards
that,
still,
that was them still. I mean, that was Charlie X. That was an early episode. Yeah. I mean, they're still trying to settle in. And she wrote that one,
too. DC Fontana wrote that one.
Oh, she did? I love that episode.
Yeah,
guys, I did, too.
You guys were mean episode. Not inviting me to do
we
that
were?
Episode.
Oh.
With you. You
were we mean. Had no idea.
Had no
we'll
idea.
Do it again, Mark. He wants to do it again.
We'll redo it.
We'll just do it again out of order. Who cares?
I want to be on Charlie X. one thing I wanted to talk about was the special effects at the beginning of this newer edition.
Yeah.
I think they're great. I think they are fun. I love seeing it. Eves, who works on a lot of the Star Trek projects of the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. He's actually, I think he was very instrumental in the design of the Enterprise from the last Next Generation film, the one that was more sleek.
We lost you there for just a second. Who are you talking about?
I lost you.
You mentioned a name.
Well, John Eves is his name, and he's a designer. Yeah. And I think if I remember correctly, he was the designer of the last Enterprise from the Next Generation film, which I thought was their best design. But he designs other starship that, and but he's fanatical over this episode. This is like his absolute favorite episode, and he's done things at the beginning of this show, and I just love it. I love that whole Air Force jet chasing the Enterprise.
So cool.
The Enterprise is sort of wobbling at first because it just got knocked around by the Black Star, and then you see that above shot looking at it. It's just great. I mean,
and I love seeing the Enterprise as a UFO.
Yeah,
yeah.
Here's this guy looking out, going, "It look, what is that? Oh my God, it's the Enterprise."
It's putting you in the situation.
In Tallahassee, there was a place here.
Outside of the universe of Star Trek, looking at it, which is
great. Remember we had a t-shirt company here called Rupp Shirts, and they had it was the first time I ever saw a Star Trek product on a shirt, and it was a window. It was printed here in town, and it was a window with some raindrops coming down, and way off in the distance was the Enterprise up over a mountain.
Oh,
that's cool.
And that was like somebody did it here in town, and everybody. I mean, there's a lot of people at Leon High School that bought that. I mean, I saw it. And I got one, but it was pretty cool. You know, I probably was not a Paramount.
That doesn't sound
licensed.
Yeah,
but it looked really good. I mean, it was a nice looking thing. They should have gone to Paramount and licensed it. But I mean, there's so many things about the show, the problems that they have to figure out, the fact that Captain Christopher is now going to have a son. He needs to get back home. Stuff like that. And then the way that they figure it out. I mean, we can sit there and say, is it possible that a guy could be walking and be beamed back into himself at that moment? But
I have a thought about that. Hmm. I have a theory about that, when people talk about that. I always like to read there are these books that came out years ago called The Nitpicker's Guide to Star Trek, and it's sort of like what we do a little bit when we talk about the anomalies, but it's basically pointing out little mistakes, but it's lovingly done, of course, out of respect and all that.
It's still great.
But one of the mistakes they say is that they're beaming a person into their own body. And my thought was the way here, and people were saying that doesn't really make sense and all that, but I think it does. And here's why. Okay. The transporter technology, what it apparently does, and this is one of the things I remember, I was actually in Death Valley one time, looking up at the stars, camping with a couple of friends. And we got into a discussion about Star Trek, and we started discussing the transporter and how it works. And we were like, what it does is a weird thing, and it actually makes sense for Dr. McCoy, being a doctor, to not like this technology and to be freaked out by it, because what it does is it destroys you and recreates you on the planet using available atoms and molecules that are down on the planet. It doesn't send anything other than information and assembly instructions. So, according to the Star Trek, books and the technical manuals and whatever, that's how it works. So the person who is on the Enterprise who gets beamed down to the planet, their continuity of consciousness ends. And the person who is assembled down on the planet only has a memory of his past. Because the molecules and the atoms were arranged exactly the same way as they were on the person. So with the Captain Christopher issue where they beam him back into his airplane and the guard, I think what they did was he's walking down the hallway and he sort of stops and then it goes and then he continues walking. What they did was they totally destroyed that body and replaced that body with a reconstructed one from the Enterprise, using the molecules of the brains of his memory at the time in the hallway. And likewise in the airplane.
Yeah,
I mean, he saw the Enterprise up there, but then it beamed him off of the Enterprise back into his brain, the setting of his brain at that time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of figured it was sort of like, and this would fit in with what you're talking about, is, God, what was the Michael Crichton book where they Xeroxed people back into the past or something, and they ended up with knights and all that.
There was
a guy that got all kind of disheveled, and he was like finding them dying in the desert, probably with your group of campers, and he was like all these little like slices of him and everything, and they figured out that almost like a scanning pattern didn't work, and that's what I thought. Is they're absolutely replacing each atom at the same moment. They're replacing it and put it and stitching back in the new one in place in those few seconds, something along those lines.
Well, here's the thing.
So we're both lawyers.
A friend of mine worked on Next Generation and did computers and stuff and worked with Okuda and those folks. And one of the things that is it's sort of like, you know, that you can't go faster than light. According to physics, a lot of physicists say you can't travel faster than light. So any science fiction that has faster than light travel is inaccurate and kind of fantasy. But, and then also the idea of the transporter is that you can never know the position and velocity of a particle at the same time. It's the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, you know, so you wouldn't really be able to have a transporter device that put all your atoms in the same place because you can't measure them in the source to replicate them. Anyway, on the computers in the transporter room, they had a setting on there that you could never read it, but it was there on the set. It said Heisenberg compensator.
Okay.
Huh. So it compensates for the Heisenberg uncertainty principle somehow.
Well, one thing about all the nitpicking about science and science fiction, I mean, we all know the stuff like there is no sound in space. We know that. That's why 2001 still the best.
Yeah.
But you look at things like that, but we are still talking about stories that are meant to be about human drama.
Yeah.
And that's the point. I mean, they fudge it and nudge it. I mean, you look at some of the stuff on, you know, second and third season Lost in Space or stuff like that, and you go, well, they just threw it out the window. Star Trek doesn't throw things out the window. It's sort of like, okay, we'll do this, and we might be fudging it, but then, you know, there's so many things that they said we couldn't do 100 years ago, 300 years ago, that we're doing now, and, you know, when somebody goes, we'll never be able to travel faster than the speed of light, and my attitude is sort of like, if you can think about it, maybe there is a way to do it.
Maybe there's a way we haven't thought about it. You know, it's
maybe
like
10 centuries from now or 20. Yep, the dog agrees with me.
Yeah. See, Darwin is like, yes, I approve this message.
Yes.
It's very opinionated.
Also, I feel like we're talking about fiction and we're talking, you know, let people have some fun with it. It doesn't have to be factually accurate all the time.
We can
have fantasies about what tech could be like or what
hard science fiction can do that. I mean, it's the point you watch something like Solaris or something, and it's like it's about the science fiction. It's almost like the people are secondary to the concept in some ways. 2001, too. I mean, those aren't the warmest and fuzziest people throughout that film. Sure. You're fascinated by the idea. In Star Trek's case, it is about the people first, with good science fiction most of the time, you know, and a few nudging and fudging.
And Star Wars, you know, Star Wars is more fantasy than science fiction, and
absolutely.
You know, I still love it. It's a, you know, you let that fantasy. I mean, I still like Lost in Space, even though, you know,
I love the first. I'm a fanatic over the first half of the first season. I think that was almost like at the level of Wonderful World of Disney or something like that.
It's great adventure, you know, space adventure.
But, I'm fanatic over Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, and that's a show for like 6 year old kids.
You know? Yeah,
it's like Steve using a headlock,
right? And the evil puppets and things like that, you know, but it's like, you know what? I love watching that episode with the puppets that come, you know, and the,
hey, I took a photograph of it and posted on Facebook of the Richard Basehart puppet. We will destroy everybody. And it's like, oh my God, I'm an evil Muppet. you know, but it was badass, you know, it was fun.
It was fun. And that's the thing. That's the thing. If you can do things like that and it's ridiculous and boring, then you fail. But if it's ridiculous and fun, you win. And we're still talking about it, you know, 1,000 years later. We watched it when we were kids.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's with those kind of things too. It's that Paul Kreber design of the Sea View and this flying sub and all that stuff. I never get tired of that kind of thing. And it's a giant, octopus. It's a giant jellyfish. It's a giant. They had Lobster one with a giant spider. They had a giant spider that was catching submarines in its web. And I'm like, this is so cool.
The talking lobster man was classic.
That was, I wouldn't call it classic. But.
Or the talking the talking carrot in
Lost in Space. Well, I mean, I've talked to several of those people on Lost in Space, and they said that was when they just said to hell with it. We're just going to keep going, and they were laughing the whole time they were looking at the script, and But
and then they
we're
go
talking
home
about
and look
Star
in the
Trek.
Mailbox for their paycheck.
Derail Star Trek. So, do we want to do accommodations and anomalies? All right.
Yes.
What's your accommodation for this?
Commendations.
Yes.
Go ahead, Berg.
I think DC Fontana is my commendation. I think she is a fantastic writer of really human, crowd-pleasing episodes. It's got all the elements in there that the feel-good stuff and those moments of, you know, I'm going to have a boy, I'm going to have a baby boy, you know, all those touching things, you know, those moments of humanness. And you get some really great Spock moments. And there's one shot in this. It's like, I love this shot of Kirk at the very beginning when I think Spock explains to him, we've been thrown back to the 1960s. Yeah. And there's this head turn where Kirk goes, what?
Yeah.
And it's goes,
his lips roll.
Yeah. What? I love that response to that. And then he looks at the view screen and it's like, It's a great moment of character. Like, you know, Kirk is facing something that even shocks him because normally that, you know, it's like, oh, we've got an alien life form. And he's like, okay, can we get a closer visual, you know? But in this case, it's like, wow, you've got thrown back in time. And so that I think, and the implications of that, I think, which she writes really well into the story and the idea of pulling people in and the people being amazed by their surroundings and the food replicator, all these little details that are so cool. That's my commendations. I think it's just the writing, the script is
okay. That's a good one. Kathy?
I think it's that the strange humor in it. I like their superiority when they go down to the planet and they're all like, and then when they're being interviewed, like they just have no fear because they know none of it's going to matter. They're going to be fine. So I love that.
Out of thin air.
Yeah, they're in this room being interrogated. They have no fear of anything. There's no repercussions or like whatever. And then, as Berg said too, that's taking us outside of Star Trek and looking in on it as a sort of a layperson, like this guy. That was a really cool little twist.
Yeah.
And just seeing the Enterprise as a UFO, just that sort of looking at it from a distance a little bit. I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think I already said mine. There's actually two things that when I think of this episode, I instantly go to them. One is the lead guest actor, and also the second guy, the head of the security guy.
Yeah.
And then those opening scenes of it starts off with 16mm.
Yeah.
But on the new versions, you can tell they even cleaned the scratches and stuff off of that. But that whole jet chasing the Enterprise is such
footage. I think.
Such a fish out of water moment that I remember the first time I saw the episode, I'm like, what? What? I mean, I remember seeing the Air Force jet and going, what they replaced Star Trek this week?
Yeah,
and
it was very confusing.
The Enterprise, I'm like, wow.
It was very cool.
So, yeah, very, very great opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of don't expect to see the Enterprise. Like you said, you're like, am I watching the wrong show? And then all of a sudden, there's the Enterprise in this weird, in a blue sky with clouds.
Loved it. Yeah, it was so cool.
Yeah, wonderful. It was very cool.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Anomalies. Should we go in reverse order now and start with Mark? Do you have any anomalies? Do you have anything that sort of not quite works about it?
The only thing I can say that doesn't work about it, maybe at all is a little bit of the fighting, like I had said earlier, was like some of the guys got knocked out too easy. Although I did really like, and we never talked about this, was the way that Christopher did pull the gun on the guys and said, I'm staying here and all that kind of stuff. And Spock came around the corner and got
The Vulcan pinch. Didn't that happen a few times? Like, I think he didn't. He pinched people a couple times in this episode. He came, didn't he come maybe into the room and grab him? I remember thinking, wow, there's a lot of pinch action in this episode.
But that was Nimoy's expression, just that almost cold robotic expression when he just, this is what I have to do. Boop. But there really is so little to this. Maybe the fact, this might be my complaint. I wish that the footage they had of the jets was 35 millimeter.
Yeah.
That's grainy. That's
grain matching.
That would be funny.
Yeah. So that's it.
That would be good. I wish they had explained that guy's red pajamas. It just bugged me.
I think that was like
talking about.
I'm going to have to pull a shot. It was very strange. It just
on the ship,
on the Enterprise.
When Christopher's running around, it was just strange.
He's a Jeffries tube grunt. I mean,
I think that's established as like engineering jumpsuit.
Yeah, they've done that.
It was very
all the time.
Strange. I did not notice it. I think it was out of context or something. It was weird to me.
They've shown those guys with those costumes.
Hey, it's my anomaly. Shut up.
My anomaly. No, but I'm saying allowed. They've shown.
I liked the fighting. I didn't give you any grief.
I'm trying to help you through this troubled time in your life. This guy. They've showed these. I mean, Burke, you've seen these red guys walking
around.
The work
suits, they're kind of.
It seems especially fabulous. I don't know.
Yeah, they do. They are a little bit fabulous.
They turn around.
They are a little fabulous.
What?
They're part of the entertainment on the Enterprise. And,
it was a dance crew left over from that theater episode I hated.
We are family.
But really, I really didn't have any. I thought this was a really solid, fun episode. And like I said, I like it when they're just sort of set bound. It's fun to me to have more of a cat and mouse. I really liked it.
Yeah. I mean, it's unusual. This might be one of the toughest episodes to pick something negative about.
My anomaly is about the same. I had another commendation was just how cool Sulu is in this episode. Sulu is always really cool. You know, I think he's one of the coolest, crew members just in coolness, and when he shows up in the hallway, when he looks around, he does that thing like when they beam in, the actors have been on that set all day and they're like, okay, stop the cameras, everybody in position, they put the actors in there and then they say, okay, rolling and action, and then they have to act like they just appeared in this hallway. And like you said earlier, the way he reacts to the stuff on the bulletin board. And then there's like a thermostat or something on the wall that he's looking at, And what's cool about that is that Sulu has always been into history. They've kind of done this thing repeatedly where he's into historical stuff. So that was a cool little character thing, not an anomaly. That's another commendation, but my only anomaly I don't know. I don't think I have any either, but I was just thinking, if they had had more of a, I don't know. I didn't even want to say this, but a better explanation for the time travel thing, like getting whipped. Like if it was that easy just to go around the sun in the Enterprise and go back in time, they could solve every other problem they ever had just by flying the Enterprise around the sun really fast. Time travel is fun. I love time travel. They did it in Star Trek 4.
They did it in Star Trek. That was the thing. Yeah. They actually brought it up. I think it's still incredibly... My daughter's calling me. hold on. Keep going.
But to me, I love time travel stories, but they do introduce that anomaly. They introduce the problem of, okay, if you can time travel, you can solve every problem that comes up from here on in. Every crew member that dies, they don't have to die. You can go spin the Enterprise around the nearest star and go back in time and prevent their death. So that you just sort of have to overlook that.
Well, that might be sort of that Superman thing where Jor-El is telling him it's forbidden. And it's like, to me, the thing that would keep them from doing it, maybe this is more of an anomaly. The Black Star throws them. They just happen to get thrown all the way to Earth and just happen to end up in its atmosphere.
Because they were on their way to Earth. Spock says, is that what they said? We were on our way there anyway.
All right. So I forgot that. But the thing is the actual threat of altering time. It's like, is it worth saving somebody? Is it this, you know, can, or there might be like a vacation thing where they treat themselves to watching Edith Keeler die over and over again for, you know, it's like, everybody take tickets, watch the truck hit Edith, you know?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I think that might be it. It's like, this is way too dangerous to be messing with.
And kind of hard to control. Because they went into this sort of accidentally, and they didn't pick the time. I mean, you really have no idea where you're going to end up or if you can get back. So you know, I think it's probably wise.
Spock did his calculations. Remember that there's another great little scene where McCoy says, shouldn't you be working on your calculations? And he said, I am. And then
that to me was a bit too superhuman for Spock. Yeah. It's like, yeah, we know you're a Vulcan, but it's like, I'm also doing that, playing three games of chess and blah,
right.
blah, blah.
That's right. Yeah. He's very smart. I've heard he's very smart.
I've heard Spock was smart.
The other thing about time travel is that you have, I don't want to talk about the time travel.
No, go ahead.
Let's not talk about time travel. We're done.
Well, you could have had it. You could have had a scene where Spock says, you know, there's another way to have done this episode, where if you had Captain Christopher on board and the question comes up about what do we do with him now, and then Spock says, well, we have to send him back because he may be involved in something. If we keep him, something won't happen and we may cease to exist or something like that. But Spock, being Spock, could have also, in the context of science fiction, have said the fact that we have him on board means that he was lost in the 60s during this UFO encounter. That's his plane was crushed and his body was never found. You know, they could go back in time and look for that story in the news, like was there an Air Force airplane that was lost in a UFO, as alleged UFO encounter, you know what I mean? So yeah. That could have come up. That's another problem with time travel, is that
it gets so heady to the point. Yeah. I mean, what they should have done is gone back to the Depression and put him with Edith Keeler in front of the truck,
right?
And then when they have another time travel problem, then there's three people and four, and you just keep stacking. You just gotta get a bigger. Spock goes like, "We got to get a bigger truck, Kevin."
Yeah,
that's all there is to it.
We're gonna have to kill everyone. We're gonna have to destroy the Earth now.
Let's just start over, kill everyone, and start with one.
No, but and time travel can that kind of stuff can drive you nuts.
Yeah.
It takes really, really good, like Harlan Ellison and the stuff that he wrote at that time, and people that really knew how to handle time travel. And I hate when I see it poorly done in shows. You know, you're watching stuff and you're like, these people, yeah, they got it, but there wasn't anything new added or a new wrinkle to it or something.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm sure you've seen Primer, the film.
I think I did. Is that the one with Bruce Willis and that other guy?
No, this is you need to see this one immediately.
It was made for like $1, really fun. It's
made in Texas, I think, by a guy named Sean Carruth. He just got some friends to give him some money. He had an idea. And it's, I think, one of the best time travel movies ever made. You're gonna watch it, and you're going to immediately watch it again.
Very science-y.
And
it's
again,
very fun.
It's super cool. It's called Primer, Primer.
So watch Star Trek, then watch Primer, and see how you can do time travel really well.
Yeah, well, and see how it really can mess up.
That's right.
And
the Michael Crichton show with the faxing in time was interesting too, because it almost believe that could happen.
Yeah,
right.
Almost believe it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah,
cool.
There. So there we are. Star Trek. Tomorrow's yesterday.
It's a good one. It's a really good, solid episode. It's a fun crowd pleaser. It's got great character stuff. It's got funny stuff. It has time travel paradoxes and weird things to think about, and great casting and beautiful lighting, film noir lighting.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I love the lighting in this episode. It's great.
It's a fun one.
Yeah.
The next
episode. Better than a lot of films.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, they
make up for the lack of women in this episode with the next episode.
That's
right. The next one's with Ariel Shaw.
It was really fun. That was a great female character. Captain
Kirk is the next one coming.
Darling, light of my life.
That's so funny.
I have to burn you down.
In a good way.
I love that episode. I was like, I remember I'd have like really other good friends that would be like saying, I never liked court martial. I'm like, I love it. So I'm excited about doing that one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Me too. Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, you want to do the court martial episode as well?
Oh, absolutely.
See you next week.
All right.
Pretty pleased with sugar on top.
Okay. okay, we'll allow that.
Okay, fine.
Oh, wait a minute.
No, just we're always like, oh, I hope we can get Maddox for this. I hope we can get Maddox for this.
I'm here.
Will he do it? Do you think he'll do it?
Yeah, we're gonna start recording in 5 minutes. Let me text him and see if he's available.
He's very busy, man.
Let me put the episode on fast forward on yeah. X8, and then I can get back to you.
See, that's the cool thing about the pandemic is people are always available.
I know, and you have no excuse. Like, oh, I'm hanging out with friends.
It's hard to even
call
out
to dinner.
You can't even call sick to work. They're like,
no,
you can't come to work, can you? How bad off are you?
I'm shoveling turtle poop.
Yeah,
can't make it.
You need to bring a turtle for a cameo for the next episode.
Yeah, well, when you guys do Gamera films, I'll bring them in. Oh, let them walk around.
That'd be very cute. I want to see that.
Gamera.
All right, then.
Gamera cool. versus Pulgasari.
Well, thank you for having me on, guys. I appreciate
it. Bye, everybody.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Don't hang up, Mark. Bye.
Yeah. Bye, everybody. Doodle. This is the Cinemondo Star Trek podcast, and we're warping out.